This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about space exploration. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
366 feet, 73 feet per second.
The mood at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory went from nervous to cheerful on July 20th, 1976. Viking 1, an unmanned mission, landed on Mars. The first craft to successfully arrive on the red planet.
So the landing itself was really cool. Of course, I'm a kid, right? I wanted to touch Mars. I didn't want to miss a thing.
Rachel Tillman was 10 at the time. Her dad, James Tillman, was a scientist and engineer working on the Viking team. Hyped up on lollipops and excitement, she anxiously waited for what was supposed to happen next. Viking 1 sending pictures of Mars back to Earth.
But the images themselves took forever to actually come in because it's one pixel at a time.
With 1970s transfer speeds, little by little, a grainy black and white image was forming.
Drawing itself on this old CRT.
A bulky, old school display monitor. Everybody, scientists, engineers, their families and kids, all craning their necks.
And nobody knew what we were looking at until we had a fairly large data set of pixels before we could even tell what anything was. And so we're all going, what is that? What does it look like?
Finally, they could make out something recognizable. And somebody yelled out,
it's a rock!
The images quickly became major news.
Man's age-old dream of a close-up look at what it's like on another planet and of searching for life there today became a reality. And what a reality. Viking 1 soft-landed perfectly on the Martian surface and immediately began sending back photographs so spectacular, even project scientists were amazed.
It was magical.
It was an audacious expedition, especially with the technology available at the time. To get to Mars, to land there, send back images, and do experiments was already a tall order. But the quest went beyond that.
Is there a form of life on Mars?
Reporter Liz Tung tracked down some of the Viking team members, and she learned that there is a push to reevaluate the mission's scientific findings because experts say they deserve a second look. Here's Liz.
Rachel Tillman was also there when Viking 1 lifted off.
We were at Cape Canaveral. I was 10 years old when we launched. And so it was this, you know, rocket with a plume that was super cool.
With her dad, James, being part of the team, Rachel had a front row seat to everything, including at the Holiday Inn, where a bunch of NASA employees and their families were staying prior to the launch.
One of the fun things that I remember was that Carl Sagan, Jerry Sofen would sit by the pool at our hotel and do talks about the mission.
Jerry Sofen was the project scientist for Viking. And Carl Sagan, the legendary astronomer and science writer, was known as the mission's resident philosopher. He was also one of the people who pushed for a thorough investigation into the possibility of life on Mars, and one of the main public faces of the mission. Mars seemed like an exciting next destination for space exploration.
NASA had just landed two humans on the surface of the moon, and NASA was looking, what do we do next?
Joel Levine started his decades-long career at NASA working on Viking. He's now a research professor at William and Mary College.
The next big step was a soft landing on Mars, to soft land a spacecraft and study Mars. And the major scientific problem to be attempted is there life on Mars today, or was there life on Mars in the past?
Photos captured during the earlier Mariner missions revealed ice caps on the surface of Mars, which offered some insights into what the planet might have looked like in the past. And exploring the red planet could perhaps provide clues about our own fate here on Earth.
We know That 4.6 billion with a B years ago, when the solar system was formed, Mars was very similar to Earth. Mars was covered by an ocean. Mars had rivers. Mars had lakes. And Mars had a thick atmosphere. Something happened on Mars that we don't fully understand that transformed Mars from an Earth-like planet to the Mars of today. And the question is, what happened? And more important, does it tell us something about the future of the Earth, how the Earth may evolve?
Two unmanned probes, Viking 1 and Viking 2, would try and answer these big questions. The two spacecraft were identical. Each was about the size of a small car with an arm for digging up soil. They would take the nearly year-long trip to Mars and then have around 90 days to gather data and conduct experiments. But first, they had to land. Rachel Tillman says that was a major challenge. Despite the images from the Mariner missions, there were so many unknowns.
We did not know what the surface was like physically. So we didn't know if it was sandy or if it was a fine powdery dust surface that you could sink into for 3 or 4 feet.
Rachel is an aerospace historian and founder of the Viking Mars Missions Education and Preservation Project.
We didn't even know how large the rocks were on the surface because we couldn't get a high enough fidelity image of the surface to know, are we going to hit giant boulders when we land? So we knew very, very little.
What they did know was that Mars's atmosphere was thin, less than 1% as dense as Earth's atmosphere. That meant a lot less drag, which in turn meant they needed to figure out another way of putting the brakes on so Viking didn't crash to the surface. Joel worked on atmospheric modeling for Viking.
We're coming into the atmosphere of Mars at a very high speed, 14 or 15,000 miles an hour. Pretty fast. And 6 minutes later, you have to be traveling 1 or 2 miles an hour to do what we call a soft landing.
The team eventually figured that one out. They developed a special supersonic parachute, one that was not only capable of inflating in such thin atmosphere, but also
one that wouldn't fall apart traveling at 14,000 miles an hour when it's opened up.
But that was just one of many puzzles they needed to figure out. Rachel says another big challenge was the fact that the Vikings had to be fully automated since they were unmanned. NASA wouldn't even be able to help pilot the craft remotely because Mars was so far away that there was a 20-minute lag in communication between the landers and Earth.
As a result of that, they had to land not only without the assistance of humans, because there was no way that you could do any course correction. If you determined that you were going too fast and you were going to hit something, it would be too late because we're 20 minutes away. So they had to create the very first autonomous descent vehicle.
And then there was the problem of planetary quarantine.
That you don't bring life with you if you're going to search for life in another planet.
Nelson Freeman helped develop the Vikings' computer systems. So before launch, the entire craft would have to be sterilized in a special chamber that could heat up to above 230 degrees for a full 40 hours.
Well, any normal electronics that were built in those days, 234 degrees would have just cooked everything, you know, and we'd have had mush.
Which meant developing special hardware and circuits that were capable of withstanding that kind of heat. Nelson also had to work around the computer's extremely low memory.
In those days, the onboard computer had only 18,000 words of memory.
18,000 words to program the descent and landing and all of the experiments that were supposed to happen on Mars. And it had to do all of that with very little power.
The power that we had to run everything was 70 watts, so that's about two-thirds of an incandescent light bulb.
NASA finally managed to solve all those problems. The craft launched, journeyed to Mars, and then
I think the most nerve-wracking event that took place on the mission,
that, according to Joel, was hands down the landing.
In 1976, we were supposed to land on the surface of Mars on July 4th, on America's birthday.
But data coming back from the craft showed that the proposed landing site was not a good fit.
There were boulders, there were big rocks, and there's a lot of pressure from the White House to land on America's birthday on July 4th, 1976. And Jim Martin said, the project manager, "We will not land until we're ready to land, and we're ready to land when we know that we have a safe landing site."
Rachel Tillman says the stakes were incredibly high.
The Soviet Union had sent 3 spacecraft in advance of us, and they'd all crashed. So there was a lot of reason to think that it would potentially crash.
Finally, after about a month of scouting, the Viking team found the right spot. And after an agonizing 20-minute wait, discovered that Viking 1 had achieved the soft landing they were looking for.
Per second, ACS is close to vertical.
So we're coming down, straight down.
Nav is green for touchdown.
8 feet per second.
Touchdown, we have touchdown. Digital zone.
Not long after came the big moment, the transmission of the very first photo sent directly from Mars's surface, taking form pixel by pixel, strip by strip. Here's Joel.
We were sitting there and watching the first picture develop of the surface of another planet from that surface of the other planet. And I remember at one point, one of our scientists named Carl Sagan said something to the effect, "Wouldn't it be interesting if we see elephants or giraffes walking across the field?" Of course, he was kidding. And of course, we didn't see that. But it was very exciting that we were seeing something that no one's ever seen before.
Finally, things came into focus. A close-up of one of Viking 1's own footpads resting on the rock-strewn ground. Over the following days and weeks, Viking 1 carried out a series of experiments using first-of-their-kind instruments developed specifically for the mission. There were analyses of the soil and climate, but maybe the most highly anticipated experiment was the first one designed to test for microbial life in Mars's soil, the labeled release experiment.
And they scooped up some sample of soil and put in a sterilized chamber that was connected to a whole series of measurement devices and brought it into the spacecraft and gave it some food.
The food was a nutrient solution containing radioactive carbon-14. And the idea was, if there were living organisms in the soil, they would eat the food, metabolize the nutrients, and then release byproduct gases, which would be radioactive and which sensors could detect.
And sure enough, that's what the labeled release experiments measured. They began measuring radioactive carbon dioxide in the chamber.
Both Viking landers performed the labeled release experiment multiple times, and each one delivered the same result, radioactive CO2, or in other words, evidence of life. It was an absolutely momentous finding, or at least it could have been. But there was another experiment also designed to test for signs of life, the gas chromatograph mass spectrometer experiment. It involved a series of complicated steps, like heating the soil to very high temperatures that were designed to detect organic molecules. And that experiment came up empty.
The results were not consistent with biological activity, and the project scientist, Gerald Soffin, used this experiment and its negative results and said, look, if we can't find organic material on the surface of Mars, there can't be life. And even though the labeled experiment gave evidence of what we thought was microbial life, without the presence of organics detected by the gas chromatograph mass spectrometer, there could be no life on Mars.
It was a disappointing finding. One that Rachel says she believes hurt Viking's reputation and its ultimate legacy.
That was very difficult for them and for the mission itself, because with that announcement, a lot of the attention was then off of Viking. altogether. People stopped paying attention. And that meant that all of the other data that was still being gathered was really not given the limelight, was not given the attention that it deserved. In addition, it created what a lot of people considered a black eye for NASA. And the Viking mission itself has been badmouthed by scientists and engineers all across the globe, including NASA employees, because they said it failed to find life, which is not accurate. Nonetheless, professionals continue to use that very simplistic statement to withhold the recognition from Viking that Viking deserves.
She says in the wake of this perceived failure, the mission was largely swept under the rug. In fact, Rachel says, when she started the Viking Mars Missions Education and Preservation Project, a NASA public information officer told her, "We don't talk about Viking." However, not everyone agrees with the conclusion that Viking did not find signs of life.
The story is, as it's actually reported, was that the GCMS, as we abbreviate it, did not find organics in the soil. But in fact, it did.
This is Steve Benner. He's an astrobiologist who's been looking into the results of Viking since 1999. And at first, he just accepted that the results had come back as negative. But then he started to review the original Viking logs. And he argues that Viking actually did discover organics on Mars, and that the life detection test results were more positive than the textbooks taught. He says the instruments used to look for organic molecules just weren't sensitive enough to detect the tiny number of microbes that would have been present in a resource-starved environment like Mars, as we have seen by using those instruments in other similar environments like deserts. Steve has been making this argument for years without much success. He even published a paper in 2000 hypothesizing that there was some substance in Martian soil that was slowly oxidizing the organic materials, thereby making them undetectable to Viking's instruments. And around 20 years later, he appeared to be proven right after another mission discovered the presence of a chemical compound called perchlorate on Mars. Here's Joel.
That very highly chemically reactive material could have very easily destroyed organic materials in the soil. Now people have gone back and looked at the Viking experiments, looked at the original data, but now we know about perchlorates and what happens when they're heated up, and it destroys organics.
So, if all of this is true, why didn't other scientists, besides Steve and a handful of others, make the same connection?
Okay, well, no one wants to make predictions about life on Mars, which might be proved wrong by later evidence. Scientific reputations could be too easily damaged in the process.
Steve says that actually happened to one of Viking's members, Gil Levin, the principal investigator of Viking's labeled release experiment.
Gil was marginalized. He was actually regarded as a crackpot by the community, even though he's no crackpot. He knew, and in the end of the day, he's probably going to be proven right, or at least at this moment, he is proven right by the preponderance of evidence.
Gil tried for years to revive investigations into life on Mars, but it felt like the whole question had become tainted.
That was sort of forbidden because everybody thought that the Viking mission had been a failure, and therefore you shouldn't be looking for extant life, but looking for past life.
Almost 20 years went by after Viking, before the next Mars mission, and attempts to replicate the experiments just weren't a priority. Although, just a few months ago, it was announced that the Perseverance, a rover that's been exploring Mars since 2021, had discovered a potential biosignature in some Martian mudstone, which NASA has called, quote, the closest we have ever come to discovering life on Mars. It's an ongoing discussion that's been breathing new life into the legacy of Viking. In fact, Steve is working on a book about the mission and its findings. And in July, NASA is holding an event to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Viking. But if you ask the people who worked on the mission, its legacy extends far beyond the question of discovering evidence of life. Here's Joel.
From an engineering perspective, the legacy of Viking is the ingenuity and expertise of the American engineer, able to do a very, very complex mission because of entry, descent, and landing, where, you know, a thousand things have to work to within a fraction of a second. So from an engineering perspective, it's an amazing feat. And basically, Viking rewrote the book about Mars.
From Nelson's perspective, Viking laid the foundation for future missions to Mars.
We gathered data and information that really set up a lot of questions and provided also a lot of answers about what was going on at Mars, what the environment was like, what the atmosphere was like. And that, I think, really, once the money came available, kept people certainly interested in Mars.
As for Rachel, she summarizes Viking's legacy this way.
Viking was the Apollo of Mars. Viking made discoveries such as water ice on Mars, such as the first possible indicators of biologic organics, and all of the firsts to enable us to land on Mars for future generations, all in one mission. It was foundational and laid the groundwork for both engineering and science that is still being used today for Mars missions.
That story was reported by Liz Tong.